Oxford Sparks Podcast, Episode 4, Hidden Worlds, Part 2.
What do you do with a set of old chemicals?
This is Stephen Johnson from the Museum of the History of Science in Oxford.
Not entirely clear what they are, bit of a nuisance to have knocking about.
And about 10 years ago, he got a call from the chemistry department.
There's always a question, what's really in there? Is it poisonous? Is it dangerous? Can you be sure that it's not degraded into something that's toxic?
Whilst cleaning out a lab, they came across an old box of chemical samples, thought to date back to the 1930s.
And essentially, I think what we were looking at were lots of tiny little vials full of different chemicals, all carefully labelled. And I think that they had simply been collected from the shelves of the laboratory and packed up in, frankly, whatever boxes were there to hand.
Now, these samples didn't just belong to anyone. They were once the property of a chemist called Robert Robinson. Actually, Sir Robert Robinson. He was knighted in 1939.
Robert Robinson was one of the leading organic chemists of the 20th century. He'd come to Oxford at the end of his career. So he received a Nobel Prize. He was very well known for synthetic chemistry, synthesizing compounds as well as analyzing them.
To Stephen, as a seasoned museum curator and a historian of science, this was the sort of find that was simply too hard to pass up on. And so
the decision was, let's keep them, partly because of the association. And we're always interested in science as a process. It's not just the perfect, polished monument of results. It's a human activity. And my hope was that we could take these and they might just give us some insight in the future.
So Stephen stowed them away safely, waiting for the day when somebody might pop along to dust them off and take a closer look at them.
For 10 years, the chemicals have been with us. They've been in a top secret off-site store known only to members of staff of the museum until the day that some more investigation and research would take place.
I guess the first surprise was going to the warehouse and looking at the samples for the first ever time. I didn't know what to expect at all. I'm Edward Imrie. I'm a fourth year chemist studying at Oxford.
10 years on, Edward Imrie has been tasked with the job of investigating Robinson's samples.
He's left his samples at Oxford, basically, and I've come to discover them again.
Were lots of little boxes. There were little wooden boxes. There were little cardboard boxes.
I mean, the samples were basically put in chocolate boxes or soap boxes.
I think my favourite is a box of exclusive chocolates from Derby that had clearly been consumed on the premises and then used to store these little vials of chemicals.
There were millions of test tubes in there, all still with wooden corks on top of it. And the labels itself were written in ink.
Edward's analysis is focused particularly on Robinson's work at Oxford, where he was trying to synthesize a chemical compound called brazilin.
Robinson, he was very passionate about his chemistry. He was very fascinated about a substance called brazilin. It's a natural red pigment found in Brazilwood in Brazil.
The tree isn't named after the country. The country is actually named after the tree, whose products were in high demand. Brazilin is a natural compound that comes from the Brazil tree, and Robinson was looking for methods to produce it synthetically outside of the tree. For the past year, Edward's been systematically analysing the samples, looking for clues as to how Robinson might have gone about synthesising brazilin from scratch.
So we picked out the ones that said brazilin, and from there I had to go through each sample to see which ones I could actually do any work on. Firstly, I went about reading about brazilin in his papers just to get a rough idea of what he did. Then I started sort of analysing the ones that were labelled just to see if he was right. And yeah, a lot of them are pure and they're right. And then I started looking at the unlabeled ones as well, just to see where it fitted in the synthesis of brazilin. I've managed to sort of fit in the pieces in a puzzle, but there are a couple missing from his synthesis that aren't in the sample box.
So we hope that through this work happening, we will be able to reconstruct some of Robinson's work. And that's a real benefit for future historians. So this is a way of writing the kind of history that depends on these things surviving and may give different insights, different perspectives than what survive in the Nobel citation. One has the grandest of views there, whereas here we're down at the lab bench level, getting a sense for what the work was really like.
I mean, I've been careful to try and use non-destructive analysis as opposed to destructive, but it is inevitable that you will be using destructive analysis on it.
So what is the best way to analyze an 80-year-old box of chemicals?
The best one that I found so far was X-ray crystallography, and that's basically dissolving the sample in a solvent, which will evaporate again to create crystals. So you put a small piece of crystal into the machine, and the machine will like look at it at different angles and do loads of different calculations, and from that data it will paint a picture on the screen. It will create a molecule which you can see immediately what elements are involved in that sample.
Once Edward knows the molecular structure of these compounds, it's only a short step to cross-reference the results with Robinson's own work.
I think some of the more surprising moments have been just doing X-ray analysis on these samples and just the machine giving a structure where I haven't seen it in any of his papers yet. There'll be a lot of discussions to see what chemistry was going on.
Analyzing the samples hasn't just illuminated Robinson's work on Brazilin, it's also provided interesting insights into his own personality and his quirks as a working chemist.
From his samples, like the way it was labeled, what came across was that he was quite impatient. He was not very systematic as in terms of writing down his results and things like that.
And so this project exists to not only investigate some of the unreported work of a Nobel laureate, but also to provide an opening into the human dimension of science, the side of the story that doesn't get passed down through a formal research paper.
So one of our objectives, one of our aspirations in preserving any form of material is that you can often connect up with science as a human process, science as a human story. And in the stereotyped image of the scientist, one has all of these terrible white lab coat stereotypes of this emotionless person doing the scientific method, whereas of course, actually, it's full of human passion.
I mean, for Sir Robert Robinson, he decided to take upon researching Brazilin, not because of its properties or anything like that. It was, for him, because he was so passionate about his chemistry, it was just a challenge, it was a puzzle for him to solve.
Modern chemists wouldn't do analysis or synthesis by hand. They tend to use computers and machinery to carry out tasks systematically and in a fraction of the time that it used to take.
I think nowadays, when chemists look back into the past, it's very difficult not to cast those earlier chemists in a rather romantic guise. I'm sure it was a freer time than it would appear now.
You can see a lot of passion that has been put into chemistry, especially back then. It's probably more efficient today than before, but the inefficiency shows the passion, shows the determination of trying to get through the different difficulties involved.
There's almost that little question and niggle at the back of your mind, you know, but have we lost something that's extraordinary about the art of chemistry as something that is a deeply personal set of skills?
There are plenty of samples left for Edward to analyse, gaining greater insights into Robinson and his work in Oxford. But the interest in this fascinating set of objects isn't just chemical, it's historical.
Often, you just have the tiny little details of history that make things come alive. So in this case, the fact that these poisonous chemicals were stored in chocolate boxes, it's just brilliant, you know, that you can't make that up. That's not anything that you can get to from reflecting deeply and profoundly on the nature of science. It gives you a sense that these were real people gathering together things around them, and that's what they had. Although they may have been doing profound research, they're also just engaging in a day-to-day world, and they have to fit together somehow. This just gives you this sudden sense of humanity was here, you're on the footsteps of real people. And that's the great thrill, I think. That's a really nice aspect.
You've been listening to the Oxford Sparks podcast, narrated by me, Chris Lintott, and produced by Ed Prosser. You can find a full list of credits and much else besides on our website at oxfordsparks.net.